Engage. Out of the park.
The NSR Media Network presents Out of the Park with Barry Davis, brought to you by aglaw.ca, The Jaywalk, and Foundation Physiotherapy. This week, former Blue Jay Candy Maldonado tells a story about being traded that is one for the history books.
So, back up, because you have a flight in the afternoon. I said, oh, wait a minute. So I had to walk downstairs and get everybody off the pool, blah, blah, blah. And that's how I got to Toronto, man.
Our guest this week, Candy Maldonado, has a unique name of Candy. And your host, well, his name is unique. It's Barry. Here he is, Barry Davis.
And Barry, of course, could be considered a type of candy.
Right. Yes, it could be like a Swedish berry.
Yes.
Yeah. Does your wife ever call you her candy man?
No, but I tell you what, I play in a Cars tribute band, and one of their albums and songs is called Candio.
Oh.
I need you.
Okay. I think I kind of play in a Cars tribute band as well.
I know. You should probably know that song by now.
Yes. Yeah. It's been a real crash course, man. Let me tell you. Holy jeez. So.
Right.
Yes.
All right. The Candyman will join us on today's show, and this is going to be a lot of fun. Another first-timer, a guy, Matthew, that won that World Series with the Toronto Blue Jays, has some distinct records regarding a couple of things he did as a member of the Toronto Blue Jays. So we'll find out what life's been like for him since baseball. We will have Ask Barry Davis, maybe, just maybe.
Yes, sir.
And all right. And up next, Matthew, well, they're going to get tested a lot. There's Matt. I'm Barry. This is Out of the Park.
Ladies and gentlemen, girls and boys, the first pitch with Barry Davis.
And the first pitch brought to you by our good friends at the Jaywalk. Hello, Julia. Hope you are well. I know Julia listens each and every week. And we are looking forward to a possible return of baseball season, Matt, so people can get excited about the Toronto Blue Jays and want to buy a lot of this gear that Julie and the Jaywalk have.
I agree. Yes, bring it on. Let's do this. What they're saying, what, July 1? That's kind of what they're thinking?
It sounds that way. It sounds that way. And you have other means of television other than cable, so you have not been able to watch any of these old games on Sportsnet, have you?
No, but I've been watching a lot on YouTube. I've just been throwing them on. Well, actually, okay, let's be serious. I'm going to be completely open and honest. I've been watching The Last Dance. Whenever I have 15 minutes to spare, I've been watching The Last Dance. Yeah, I just cannot get enough.
Don't spoil it. Don't spoil it for me. I love every bit of it so far.
Oh, it's so good.
Really good. Really good. Okay. We talked about The Last Dance already. So let's get into the testing that's going to be done. And yes. Rob Manfred announced that Major League Baseball will test its players for COVID-19 multiple times per week should the league resume operations in the coming months. Okay, first and foremost, have you seen what actually happens during one of these tests?
I'll tell you, I have not necessarily firsthand knowledge, but I have secondhand knowledge. My dad had this done.
Oh my God!
Yeah, oh yeah, my dad had this done. And actually, I'll go one further. My sister, who works at Trillium, she's a physiotherapist at Trillium Hospital in Mississauga. One of her coworkers that she was working with tested positive for COVID. So therefore, everybody that this person came in contact with had to be tested for this. And my sister said that they take this Q-tip that has got to be like 8 inches long.
Oh, yeah.
And they bury this thing into your nose, probably up to about 4 inches.
Yes. I would say that you're literally scratching your brain.
Yeah, like it is literally right on the back. It's literally hitting the back wall of your nasal cavity.
You know what? If I start to show any symptoms, I'm going in and I'm like, hey, man, I've got it. You don't have to test me. I know I have it. So just, okay, give me my medicine and let me go home.
Yeah, listen, man. This thing, on top of the fact that it's just health-wise, this thing's no joke. The actual test, like, is also no joke. There's just nothing. There's nothing nice about any of this. It's freaking horrendous.
There could be worse places that they could stick that cotton swab. I'll tell you that.
I'll tell you something. I had a friend or have a friend that you know quite well, and I won't mention his name, but we can talk about it off air. And he was doing some extensive touring in the Montreal area. And, you know, this is the late 80s, early 90s, and he was single. And everything that goes on or is rumored to go on in the music industry when you're on the road, well, those things were going on. Dude, he got the dose, okay? He got an STD, and they take a Q-tip, and oh, they no, literally...
No. We got to stop it right
up
there,
your urethra.
Oh, no, my.
Right God. Up, baby.
Okay. So in addition to the multiple tests per week, instant testing would be provided for anyone showing symptoms of the novel coronavirus. Check this out, Matt. Players who test positive would be quarantined until testing negative twice. The league has been in contact with the Players Association this week as, of course, they try to work out this plan to return to baseball. I think if you're going to do this, Matt, you've got to test. But like I think we mentioned this on the member show, if a player tests positive, then what?
Well, and that's what I said. We were talking about this, and I think I brought it up. I'll tell you then what. Here's what happens. Nobody's going to bring this up. That player is going to go on the DL. There'll be a phantom. They'll be on the phantom DL.
Yeah, I think because, you're right.
Right, and you know what's going to happen? Like, if it comes out that one of these players have got it, and I was saying this on the member show, bro, this is Jurassic Park. Like, you have a park full of female dinosaurs, and then miraculously they begin breeding because life's going to find a way. Are you telling me that you're going to have complete control over a bunch of single baseball players in their mid-20s? They're not going to be going out at night and searching for whatever the hell they're searching for? That is complete BS. These guys are going to be trying to break out. Absolutely. Somebody's going to catch this, and then what's going to happen is they're going to put them on the phantom DL, and they're going to keep it there. We have a question during our Ask Barry Davis segment that kind of dovetails into this. It's actually a really interesting take. I've never heard this before.
Good tease, Matt. That's a good tease.
Yep. Yes. So, but my opinion is, yeah, someone gets this, it's just going to be swept under the rug. Oh, phantom DL. He has a hammy pull for 14 days. Right?
Yes. I mean, yep. You just hope that, you know, that player doesn't get really sick and then something, you know what I mean?
Agreed. Yes.
So, you know, and that's the thing, right? You can look at the numbers of how many people have tested positive and say, well, I don't believe those numbers. They're not accurate, but the amount of deaths are not inaccurate. I mean, deaths are reported. You know, you can't.
Yes.
I mean, I'm sure you could fake one, but it's not likely to happen. Right?
Yeah. No. Yeah, absolutely. And again, too, the MLB would have so much invested in this because what they're trying to do is literally salvage anything of this season. They have so much invested in this that they simply cannot risk having a player get it and then have that come out. Right? Because the last thing that you want to do is you get all your pumps primed and your switches flipped, and then you get yourself up and rolling again, and then bang, shut it down. No way, man. This is going to be it. So they're going to keep a close watch on everything. Now, granted, though, you are going to have a certain percentage of the population that is either A, not a sports fan, or B, not baseball fans, that are going to be saying, wait a second, they're using all these tests on these athletes simply so that the owners can make any semblance of money, and simply for sports fans. If you're not a sports fan, you're looking at this as just complete hypocrisy.
Speaking of sports fan, it seems that, oh, by the way, folks, if you're not members, you missed the breaking news that Matt's favorite player in Major League Baseball is Blake Snell. That is Blake Snell is Matt's favorite player.
Yeah, yes, he is.
He apparently isn't the only one who's a little bit upset about this whole, how are we going to divvy up the money in a short season? Because the lawyers for the union have submitted a request to Major League Baseball saying they want a slew of financial documents that detail the industry's finances. Matt, there's a good chance that the 2020 baseball season doesn't happen, not because they couldn't find a safe way to do it, but because the owners and the players are going to be in such a battle that they're going to just strike or be locked out.
Well, look, this is This is where, when you're dealing with unions, this is where you're going to run into problems, right? Like you've seen it with the NHL, where the players and the league just cannot come together. And it would be a darn shame for these two sides to not be able to get together and play during a season where you could potentially have the most eyes on your game in the history of your game. And because everybody has been so denied and so without sports for so long, anything that they put on the TV is going to be watched. It would really, really be a shame, and it would be in bad business for the MLB to not be able to get their heads out of their asses and the players to get their heads out of their asses and just get something on the field. For the love of God, even if it was just a freaking home run derby every night, I would watch that, right?
This is what Trevor Bauer has to say about this. He says, quote, "There are so many ways to hide the money. If I'm going to have to trust my salary to Rob Manfred marketing the game to make more money for the game, I am out on that," Bauer said. "Let me market the game and we'll all make more money."
Whoa.
That's...
Yikes.
Yeah.
Yikes. Okay. And listen too, like, not that I want to agree with Trevor Bauer on things, because he's said some pretty horrendously awful or abhorrent things in the past, but I agree. I bet you there's lots of places to move money. I bet you there's lots of places where the ownership can be hiding things. And if the players need lawyers now to be looking into the finances of the league, you would have thought that at some point along the way, they would have been looking into the finances of the league, like by far and away earlier than this. Ladies and gentlemen, this is why a hard cap is kind of essential, because in a hard cap system, you have to, those books have to be open, because both sides have to see exactly what's happening in order to establish, in this case, it would be BRR, baseball related revenue, right? In the NHL, those books are wide open because these players have to see exactly what's going on. I think it's completely idiotic that this would be the first time where the players union would be like requesting to see the books of the owners. Why? Like, why now? Because what, have your players been getting duped out of money? Now then again, let's be real here. When Mike Trout's getting a contract worth $330 million or whatever the hell it was, there's no way that he needs to be looking at the books of the ownership structure, because you're getting a contract that is $330 million. You know what you would see on your books is you would see your damn contract all over the books.
All right, Matthew, we heard a quote from Trevor Bauer. Now, this is a quote, and I'm going to read it word for word, Matthew. This is a quote from your favorite player. Come on.
Mr. Blake Snell.
There you go.
Yeah.
"Bro, y'all got to understand, too, because y'all going to be like, bro, play for the love of the game. Man, what's wrong with you, bro? Money should not be a thing, bro. I'm risking my life. What do you mean? It should not be a thing. It 100% should be a thing."
All right.
I swear to God, that was not made up. That was his exact quote.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
That's a
good quote.
Yeah, that's a really good quote. Now, again, for those who aren't members and didn't hear Matt's rant, he actually thinks that Blake Snell deserves to have all the money he has coming to him.
Yeah.
And I this is all I'm going to say, Matt. It's not so much how he feels, it's the way he decided to
express it.
Yes. For him to go to social media, and listen, I was just curious, okay? I was just curious. I clicked a post on a story and just read all the comments just to see what the balance was between people who said, "I agree with you, Blake Snell," and those who said, "Oh my God, you're the worst human ever." And I have to say that the majority, the overwhelming majority, Matt, of our listeners probably hate you right now.
Good, whatever.
However, 20% went the other way. So there you go.
Listen, are you trying to get me to to sort of recap what I said on the member show? Is that where this is headed?
Nah, I mean, you know, he's got a contract. You think they should pay the contract.
That's right? It.
Bingo, bango, bombo.
That's it. The guy's under contract. Pay him.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So,
right?
What? How about this? They pay him his entire contract, but he donates half of that to charity, to those who cannot afford to pay their bills right now.
Hey, listen. Listen.
Mic drop.
Yeah, that's fine. All I'm saying is that money's coming to him. Look, it's the same thing as if he gets put on the injured reserve. Okay? If he's put on the injured reserve and he can't play for the season.
The former DL, right, by the way.
Yeah. He can't. He's still being paid. Right?
Again.
Like if he, right? If again, he starts 10 games.
That's an issue between him and the owner, him and the GM. That's not stuff for him to say to his fans.
No, I completely agree. Listen, I don't like the fact. I don't like how he went about it. I think that was in poor taste. But, and also too, let's be serious. He was not the most, it wasn't the most eloquent of delivery, right? Man, it could have been structured a lot better.
I had no idea that he was dumber than a bag of rocks. Until I saw it, I went, wow, wow.
That really sucks.
He is not a very smart individual.
Or at least, come on. He definitely did not acquit himself well during this, for sure.
No.
Right? Maybe he was putting something on or whatever, but yes, it was definitely
maybe
not.
He was on something.
He might have been, right? It's the off season technically. So it just was not delivered well. But as far as I'm concerned, if he's got his name on a contract and that contract says Blake Snell gets X number of dollars, I'm sorry, but that's what he gets. The owners are billionaires. Who gives a crap? Who gives a crap? They have billions of dollars.
Yeah.
Right?
I'd rather that money go to charity than to the players.
I will give you that. Paid. Yes.
Players are already getting paid very, very handsomely to play a game. Not so much back in Candy Maldonado's days, and that is still to come, but up next, we're going to answer some questions. Before that, though, here's a little We Ain't Petty. You got lucky. There's Matt. I'm Barry. You're listening to Out of the Park.
You better watch what you say. You better watch what you do to me. Don't get carried away. Girl. Good love is hard to find.
you got lucky. And you know, Matt, this is really, really cool. One of the nice things that's happened during the pandemic is that we've had a chance to make these recordings with both We Ain't Petty and Driven, two totally different types of processes doing them. I mean, our guitarist, Ken O'Gorman, mixes all of the Petty stuff. I do all the Driven stuff. I don't have nearly the experience of Ken or the equipment that Ken has, but I really love doing it. And I think with each one that I do, it's getting better and better.
Oh, dude, your mixing chops have drastically sharpened, man. And for our listeners that don't know, for our listeners that have absolutely no musical inclination, all that we're talking about is mixing is where you take all the tracks recorded by the various instruments and you basically begin to set levels and you begin to pan them left and right and sort of create the atmosphere. Listen, a song can be seriously ruined during the mix, right? So it takes a really good set of ears. And Davis has really, really shown over the last little bit that his mixing skills are really starting to happen. It's the last one that he did. What was the last Driven one that we did, Davis?
My Best Friend's Girl.
Is that right? Okay. So yes. the last mix that I heard was that Good Times Roll?
Oh, sorry. Yeah. What did I say?
Best Friend's Girl.
Oh, yeah. We never did that song.
Not yet, anyway. Yeah.
Same okay. album. Good Times Roll. Yes. That's
so. So, man, like your mix was so clean, like really, really clean. There was a lot of room for everybody. You had everything set at just the right level. There was nothing where I was having to really, really dig in and listen. It was such a clean, clean mix, man.
And, you know, it's funny that, you know, you notice that, but a lot of people won't even really know the difference. But when we're mixing these things, if I'm sitting at my computer listening and I have my big Beats headphones over the ears, it will sound, I'll hear it, I'll say, this sounds beautiful. But then I'll go out to the car and listen to it. And I'm like, oh my God, this sounds like crap. What happened? And then you listen to it on a little speaker and it sounds completely different again. So I find that the better the sound source that I'm listening as I'm mixing is, the worse it is for me. You know, because if I can get something to sound good on a real cheap pair of headphones or a little tiny speaker, then it's going to sound amazing with headphones, right?
What you need to do is you need to get yourself a pair of what they call mixing headphones, and they're actually not even worth all that much money. I think they're like $50. And what they do is it's basically a flat response. There's no bass boost. There's no treble boost. Everything comes in flat, literally flat, right? So you're not dealing with, because the problem with the Beats headphones is they really accentuate the bass. So what you do is you would-
It's all about the bass.
Yeah, right? And so you basically keep trimming the bass back on your mix because you think, oh, but this, man, there's lots of bass here. And then you go and you drop the mix in your freaking vehicle and it's like, where the hell's the bass? Yeah. Right? So, yeah, if you can get yourself a pair of super flat headphones, the issue with the Apple earbuds, not the AirPods, but the earbuds, is they're a bit trebly enhanced. So you're gonna tend to find that you get a bit more treble than you should, right? So, yeah.
And I don't want to be in trouble.
No, ba-dum-ching.
Because I want all about the bass.
Man, slappity bass.
All right. Questions?
Yes.
And if people want to submit questions, they've never done it before, Matthew, how would they go about doing this?
NSR Media, that's N as in Nancy, nsrmedia.ca. Hit the Ask Barry Davis tab, tells you how to do it. If you want to stay on Twitter, that's fine too. You can use the Ask Barry Davis hashtag as well as you can DM me. Follow me on Twitter at Matt_NSR. My DMs are open. Both of these questions have come in from people DMing me. And Lauren from MK, I have to know where MK is. Is it Markham? I'm not sure. Lauren from MK, who's an avid DMer, asks, who should be the next Blue Jay on the level of excellence?
Oh.
I thought this was a good one.
Yeah. You know, there are definitely a few that I can think of that need to go up there.
Is Joe Carter up there?
Of course he is.
Okay.
I'm going to look up right now.
Okay. While you're looking up, I'm just going to spitball here. Joe Carter's got to be on there just simply for his involvement in both the 91 and the 92 World Series.
Yes.
Roberto Alomar's on there. I was actually there for that to happen.
Okay.
Is Dave Steeb on there?
Of course he is.
Okay. That's a good one. Okay. Here's an interesting one. Jose Bautista.
No.
And that, to me, would be one simply for the historical significance of the bat flip.
Yes. What,
right?
It will happen. Whether he's the next one to go up there, I don't know. I'd love to see Jesse Barfield up there.
Yeah. Tony Fernandez. Is Tony Fernandez up there?
Of course, yes.
Okay.
I don't see Tom Hankey. Tom Hankey's got to be the next one.
Also got to be. Okay, and Doc Halliday's up there, of course.
Halliday's there. Pat Gillick, Cito Gaston.
Yep.
Delgado, Tom Cheek, George Bell. So there you go. They're all up there. So
honestly,
that's
man,
a great question.
But my vote, my next vote would be, or my vote for the next player should be Jose Bautista.
Mm-hmm. But yep, there are many sure. that I think deserve. I think John Olerud should be up there at some point.
Yep, I agree.
Right?
Yep.
So, great question.
Love it. I know. It's awesome. Okay, next one. This is from at Claudio Verdilli. Actually, this guy is my neighbor, believe it or not,
okay.
Which is fantastic. Okay, good question. Claudio asks, what player would it take to cause a player strike during COVID? As in, who would lead the charge, in your opinion, in players striking because they don't want to play?
Well, it sounds like Blake Snell is going to be one of them.
You know, when this came up, I got to tell you, man, I'm sure if Justin Verlander got a freaking bee in his bonnet, he would be one of the players that would be leading the charge. My thoughts would be you'd have to get a player that was super outspoken, but not
Joey
Blake
Votto.
Joey Votto would do it. Absolutely. Now, if Mike Trout ever said anything to anybody, he would be a player that could do it, but he doesn't say anything anyway, so whatever.
But he would, you know what? He would never do that because he wants to play.
I agree. But it's got to be, it has to be one of those guys, you have to have an outspoken player. You have to have somebody that is just willing to say things how they're feeling. Again, the person that came to mind for me would be Justin Verlander, or start looking at these guys that are just not willing to shut up. The other thing too is that, in my opinion, this has to be an elite player. You can't have your bench guy coming out. This has to be somebody that is like top of the league stuff.
It cannot
right?
be Munenori Kawasaki.
It cannot be. Although that would be hilarious.
He could be, but he's not in MLB right now. But the guy you just mentioned, Jose Bautista.
Yep.
If he was still playing, he would be the guy.
Yep. Absolutely. You have to have a bunch of accolades behind your name to make this really hit. Now, then again, too, Justin Verlander, no one gives a rat's ass what he says because he plays for the dirtbag cheater Houston Astros, so nobody wants to hear from him anyway. But is there somebody else out there? I'm just trying to openly think here who would be, you know, who would have been a guy that would have done this? It would have been Big Poppy. Big Poppy would have been a guy that everybody would have listened to.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good one as well. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. But so, good question, huh?
Yeah, that's a great question. What was Candy Maldonado like in the clubhouse? Was he one that would take charge? Well, we'll find out next when we are joined by the former Toronto Blue Jay. There's Matt. I'm Barry. You're listening to Out of the Park.
Candy, oh, I need you. Sundress will be rain.
Back here on Out of the Park, Barry Davis, Matt the producer McFarlane, and joining us on the line now from beautiful Puerto Rico is former Toronto Blue Jay Candy Maldonado. Candy, first of all, just give us a little picture of what we're talking about temperature-wise and how beautiful it is.
Do we want to know this or are we going to throw up?
Well, Barry, Matt, you probably throw up because unbelievable, the weather, especially for this month and the way the whole year started. We've been in the 87s. Last Saturday, it was 93, but with the humidity, it went up like 103.
Wow.
Oh,
we had snow last week.
Yes, we did.
Yeah, I saw that because my daughter lives in Jersey, Cowsat, and we were surprised that they got the snow and the weather came down to 30s. And then the next day it was up in the 70s. So it's a crazy atmosphere around the globe.
Candy, what's the biggest export coming out of Puerto Rico?
The rum.
Okay. That's
Matt
fantastic.
Should know that. Matt's a big, you know, drinker of rum and rum.
Yeah,
whiskey.
No, but it just yes, but wow, that's fantastic. Now then like would it be a whole lot of sugar cane, Candy?
Well, they used to. I know they imported a lot. And we also have some pharmacies that they use the USA logo, but it's created here and actually not too far from the town that I live.
Candy, how has COVID affected Puerto Rico? Have you guys been, for the most part, not as bad as what's happened in the United States?
Well, you know, I tell you one thing. We are small island, you know, this is 100 miles for 35. We've been very cautious. A lot of people blame government that when the first cruise ship came in, that's when the whole thing started. One of the passengers, well, a couple of them, they were pretty sick. But trying to be cautious, masks, trying to keep your distance, stay at home as much as you can. We are in a situation where my wife and I, we own a supermarket. So we open for the public, but taking all the measures that you have to in this point, you know, allowing less people walking in, keeping their distance and checking them every day.
Wow. So then has it been like a real challenge in comparison to how the store used to run? Like, would it be, are you seeing 50% less customers, or is it just more of spacing them out? How's the effect been on the actual store?
Well, tell you the truth, when we started taking orders, delivering, it really has picked up. A lot of people that are more afraid of being in an environment where there's a lot of people. So we are doing pretty good. And we are in a section that a lot of customers still come down. And now we see more people more freely walking in the street, you know, taking all the precautions, but not like the beginning. They didn't want to go out, and you can see the streets. They were like a ghost town.
Yeah. So, Candy, I got to ask you, owning a grocery store, I mean, we always talk to players about life after baseball. How long after baseball did you, you know, kind of have this desire to own a business and you know, own a store like this?
Well, this was something that came up when I went to that same place that we bought to get some groceries that I needed for an activity that I was going to win. The father of the owner was the one that approached me and asked me, and I told him the first time, because the question was, have you ever thought in your mind maybe owning a place like this? And I told him, well, sir, if I tell you yes, I'm lying to you, but you never know.
I love it.
Those exact words, you know, but you never know. I mean, and I remember coming the second time I went over, his son, that was the first time that we both had a little chat. He asked me, did my father talk to you? And I stood there for a while, trying to think, and I said, well, yeah, is he a strong, light person? Yeah, that's him. Did he offer you the supermarket? Yes, he did. And he said, well, he's crazy.
So you bought it.
More crazy than me, because I asked him, but are you selling?
So,
wow.
When you retired after the 95 season, Candy, Were you kind of in that, oh, I'm going to take a couple of years off and do absolutely nothing because I've been playing for the last 15 years? Or were you automatically driven to step to the next chapter of your life?
Well, to tell you the truth, you know, it was a battle, because I always told my wife that I want to retire on my own terms. After the 94 strike, You can see the changes that were coming up. I was 35 years old. And I said, I think this is the best time to walk away, because they were trying to eliminate all the veteran players and having more younger players, which, you know, they were developed and great players that were coming at that age. And I always said, I hate to see that after 15 years in the big leagues, have somebody call you in the office and say, you know, unfortunately, you know, we want to thank you for your service, but la, 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 la. And I struggle because baseball's been my life. I started when I was 17 years old, then I signed as a free agent with the Dodgers. And I had a very nice career and been blessed to start with a great organization like the Dodgers. And then I went to San Francisco, which is another historic organization from the days of New York and the Willie Mays and Cepeda and Marichal. And winning the first ever World Series for Canada and the way they treat me when I was there in 91, when I got there, and the team, and Mr. Gaston, Zach Adad, Paul Beeston. It's unbelievable, not because I'm talking to you guys from Canada. It's been a blessing, I thank God, for my career and the place that he took me, because it's been outstanding.
Candy, what was the biggest shock coming to Canada? Now, again, for me, just looking where you were born and, you know, where you're talking to us from, I would think, okay, there's snow. But what was the biggest shock as far as culture between the Americans and the Canadians?
Well, to tell you the truth, you might not believe this. There was something about someday it might happen when I started. You know, looking back, when I signed with the Dodgers the next day, what's his name of the scout, Dominican scout? Epi Guerrero came and made me an offer, and I told him that I already signed with the Dodgers.
Oh, no.
It was the first time with Toronto.
What? Really?
Yep.
And, you know, well, the Toronto Blue Jays were, you know, one of the innovators in bringing players over from the Dominican, players over from Puerto Rico. And they had a great scout in Epi Guerrero that, yeah, brought over so many guys like Tony Fernandez and, you know, on down the line, Damaso Garcia. So many players that came over through Epi Guerrero.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. But now, guys, hold up a second here, just from my own knowledge. Why wasn't this being done with the frequency that the Jays were doing it prior to the Jays doing it? Like, why did it take the Blue Jays to make this almost quote unquote in fashion?
I don't know, but in the old days, as you know, you sign as a free agent.
Right.
Able to sign as a free agent, you didn't need to go to the draft. That's why you saw more players from Puerto Rico and different teams in the States. As a free agent signing with different organizations. And to continue the story about Canadians, when I first signed with the Dodgers, guess to where they sent me? They sent me to Lethbridge, Canada.
Ah, in Alberta.
In Alberta.
Now that
poor guy.
That would have been a little chilly during the April days.
Yes.
Yeah, but, you know, for some reason. But I was thrilled when I first got to American League. And I saw the Sky Dome. At that time, it was called the Sky Dome. And you can see the other side, something special about the organization, about the city, the people there. It's a culture that embraces you as a family once you are a Blue Jay. And in those days, of course, it was a winning atmosphere before I got there.
And can you look? Let's look at that 91 season, because you start with Milwaukee. You know, you only played 34 games. Do you have any idea that there was a trade in the works? Were you unhappy there? How did this all happen?
Well, unfortunately, I got hurt second day of the season. I hit a double off Kevin Brown and turning in my first at bat. And turning first, I felt a pop in my left foot. And I played seven innings into that, you know, my feet couldn't take it anymore. And then, of course, you spend 8 weeks in the disabled list. When you come back, we had a few young stars that they had in the farm system, Greg Bond, Dante Bichette, and Mr. Robin Young, you know, was a center fielder. So when I got back, I basically lost that spot. And Mr. Trevor Horn, you know, great manager, he knew my situation. And he said, I'm going to give you as much opportunity that I can so that people can see you out there because you are a class guy. And I remember a few days before this happened, he said, just be patient. Bear down with me. You're not playing today. I was supposed to play because he was giving me an opportunity to play against left-handed pitchers. And I wonder what's happening. And then I went into Boston. I remember talking to my fellow friend from Puerto Rico, Jamie Navarro, pitcher, because I woke up that day. It was getaway. We were going to Texas, and I'm in the bus almost at midnight, and I'm telling him, Jamie, I don't know. I got a feeling that it's a weird feeling, but I don't know what it is, or I can't explain, but I feel like something's going to happen. And sure enough, that day, for that trip, I had my family in Milwaukee, and I told them, let's go to Texas so they can go on the rides in the water park.
Oh, yeah.
They have there.
In Arlington there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when I got there, I told my wife and the kids, well, you guys go downstairs, and then I should be there around 10 o'clock. Give me a little time because we flew all night, and I want to spend some time. And so I'm sleeping, and I hear a knock. I said, oh, no way. Don't tell me she forgot something. I got to open the door.
That's fantastic.
And right away, I look, and it was Trevor Horn, and he was an upbeat guy, you know. Congratulations, Candyman. You're going from last place to first place, blah, blah, blah. And I'm, like, trying to wake up and say, what happened? You just got traded. Oh, my God. And they want you to be there tomorrow. So pack up, because you have a flight in the afternoon. I said, oh, wait a minute. Wait. So I had to walk downstairs and get everybody off the pool, blah, blah, blah. And that's how I got to Toronto, man.
That's an amazing story.
I love it. I love the fact that he's like, did my wife forget something? That's the best.
Well, you know, because you're coming from the East Coast to go to Texas after a night game. It was a day off the next day. So you basically, like 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock Eastern time. Once you land, and then this happened, but since day one, it has been a first-class organization. I talked to John Brio, which was a traveling secretary at that time. I told him, listen, I brought my family, whole family, and they flew all my family back to Toronto. Don't worry about it. And when I walk in, the first day at the office, you know, Mr. Gasson, Cito, told me, you're my left fielder. You're hitting sixth. Whenever you need a day off, you just come into my office.
Wonderful.
And I said, wow. I never heard those words before.
And Candy, wow. You look at this team that you joined, and even though this was not the World Series winning team, it had a lot of the makings of it, but you walked into a clubhouse where, you know, there were some great veterans. There was a Mookie Wilson. If I'm not mistaken, wasn't Dave Parker there for a while at the part of the season as well? Yeah. I mean, these names that were there, you must have looked in this clubhouse and said, oh, yeah. If there was any doubts, if there was any, you know, sadness of leaving Milwaukee, well, look what I've just walked into.
Well, you know, my square was the first base coach in those days. And after I got traded, we talked. And it was funny because I guess we were playing in Milwaukee, and one of the umpires, one of the old veterans, he's telling this team needs a left fielder that has a little pop. We're looking. That's in between innings.
Oh, my God.
What's the name? He said, well, your left fielder is sitting in the bench. Because they were in Milwaukee. He's sitting in the bench right there. The umpire. So Squire comes and tells Cito. That's the story. Tells Cito. And Cito tells Paul. And
next thing you know. That's amazing. Now, hey, is it 100% true? Who knows? But it's a great story.
No, it's true. It's true. I mean, I'm not making up stories about it because, you know, we became friends and we were in a flight. I don't know if it was going down to Seattle or something like that. And we came back and I said, you know, Candyman, when we got you, it wasn't a scout that got me. It was an umpire that recommended it.
That is a first. Okay, so then question for you, Candy, is so you get traded to Toronto, but that also means that your wife and your family gets traded to Toronto. What did your wife think of this? Had she ever even heard of Canada?
Well, yeah, she did. Because remember, I was in the National League and we split them up, Montreal. And before that, I played with the Indians. And it was a great place to take your family because, you know, it's beautiful and the people are so nice and there's everything there. There's all kinds of food and great places. But going back to what you said, yeah, walking into that clubhouse with that group, Parker, Rance Molyneux, Tabby.
Man, even Dave Steve was there. You know,
Dave Steve, yeah, Stoudemire.
Yeah, it was a pretty loaded team, really was.
Yeah.
But after that 91 season, Candy, when you guys were eliminated by the Minnesota Twins, did you look back maybe in the offseason saying, we should have won the World Series that year, we were that good, or did you realize that, okay, maybe there's a key ingredient or two that might be missing because – of course, Pat Gillick did his magic that offseason, and let's introduce Jack Morris to your rotation. And, what was the other big one? Oh, yeah, let's add Dave Winfield to the outfield, right?
Yeah, well, you know, definitely we fall short, and you start thinking the things that we should have done. And we had, you know, we got outplayed by the Minnesota Twins. I mean, you learn over the years, and I was one that had the opportunity to play in quite a few playoffs. You know, when you go into playoffs playing good baseball, you're hot. Good things happen.
Yeah.
If you fall into your offense is not hitting or your pitching is not there after being successful all year, little things like that can turn a series. But we all came back the next year and seeing what Gillick did, bringing Jack and Big Winnie, you know, it was like, okay, this is the year. We can't not lose because we got all the bases covered. And I remember one thing that you might not believe. Pat Tabler made a T-shirt that in the back said 3 for 3.
Are you serious?
And people might think, yeah. And people thought that, you know, seeing 3 for 3 was going 3 for 3 as a hitter, you know, 3 line drives and 3 at-bats. And it was winning the division, winning the American League championship, and winning the World Series.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, and I listen, it's funny because I'm not sure, because you would have been down there on the field, but I haven't seen Canada united with baseball. Well, the only time since really was the Blue Jays in 2015. I remember watching that World Series in 1992 and going out between innings, and you could have laid down in the middle of the street and not been hit by a car because there was nobody out on the roads. I have never seen it like that ever. It was literally everybody was in their homes watching baseball. It was amazing.
Well, you know, we broke the assistant record, you know, that year. It was an amazing run from 91 and 92. You know, you've seen the ballpark on a Monday, you know, 39,000 people, almost 40,000 people. Detroit was in last place, and it can be playing on a Monday, and the ballpark was packed. You know, being in Canada was unbelievable in the support and how the whole country, it wasn't only Toronto. It's like a country. You were playing for a country that was behind us. We go to Seattle, and half of the stadium is full from people from Vancouver.
And let me tell you, Candy, that's the subject of much ire when it comes to the people from Seattle. Every time the Jays pull in there, it's like a home game. And there's even newspaper articles written about how the Blue Jays fans are just overrunning the place when the Jays pull in.
Yeah. And the same in Detroit.
Yeah. I was there with the broadcast when the Blue Jays played Seattle maybe about 5 years ago. And, you know, Felix Rodriguez was pitching, and they have that K corner in left field. And Other than that area, I mean, that was pretty much all the Seattle Mariner fans that night. You know, they were all in that one little spot. It is, you know, it must have been a wonderful thing as a Blue Jay to go into another city like that and be the home team, really.
I love it.
Well, you know, the thing that made it so special, it was the fact that the clubhouse attendant, you know, Jeff, the assistants, bat boys, the people that work at the stadium, the whole squad, it was one mission. Like, we all pulling on one side to accomplish that goal. The front office, Mr. Beeston, you know, I mean, you walk in, whatever you need help. What can you do to just focus on playing baseball?
Huh. Wow. So, Candy, then question for you, because I don't know much. Is there a fairly active Puerto Rican culture or area in Toronto, or is it just a bit more of like a melting pot?
Well, I tell you the truth, there's some people from Dominican. You met a lot of people from Venezuela and Colombia. Because nice. for them, being a republic is like us getting to United States, being U.S. territory. We don't need a special visa or paperwork to get to USA. But I have to go through customs once I go to Canada. And Canadians, you know, there's some Latin places. And you always find your spots that you can get some taste of your native food.
So where is the best Puerto Rican place in Toronto to eat that you remember?
There used to be one in Queen Street. It was Dominican, but Dominican and Puerto Ricans, they have a similar way to make some famous rice and beans. And the plantain, the green plantain, they call it, we call it mofongo.
Yep. Those are awesome. So listen, during your time with the Jays, you actually had a chance to have a few like firsts. And you drove in the first run, I think, in a World Series game in Canada, correct? Something along those lines?
Yeah, I did the first game winning hit and the first World Series ever played in away from U.S. territory in the bottom of the ninth in the first game.
That was off Reardon, wasn't it?
Off Jeff Reardon.
Wow. Just take us through like what you remember of the emotion, you know, of winning. Because there were so many emotional games during those that postseason. I mean, there was the Roberto Alomar hit off of Dennis Eckersley. There was, you know, Ed Sprague's big home run. There were so many wonderful moments. What sticks out to you, Candy, as that wow moment of that postseason?
Well, believe it or not, I caught the last out against the Oakland A's at the Sky Dome.
That's right.
Us to the World Series.
Yep.
And then the first game that we play in the World Series, I get the game-winning hit, and my fellow Puerto Rican and our Hall of Famer, my brother, Robbie Alomar, scored that run. You mentioned Sprague. You mentioned the boys in the trenches playing here, there, and in the Sky Dome, that play, that Devo, I think is the best catch I've ever seen.
The triple play, you know, that wasn't.
That triple play that...
If we only had video replay in 92, right?
Oh, it would have been, you know, record-setting play. But it was like a spider in the wand making the play. If I don't commit that error in Atlanta, Dave Winfield doesn't get his first ever extra base hit in the World Series. So it's always a reason that things happen.
How hard is it as sorry, Matt, I just wanted to follow up real quickly.
Yeah, go for it.
When you make an error like that in such a big game, I mean, we're not talking Bill Buckner type error, but I always wondered what it was like for a player to have something like that happen in a big moment. And is it something that takes days, weeks, years to get over? There is part one with former Toronto Blue Jay, Candy Maldonado. Wow, Matt. And part two will be coming up on the next Members Only, where he'll answer that question about that embarrassing moment. Wow, that's the first time you and I have ever had a chance to speak to Candy Maldonado, and just a wonderful human being he is.
What a gentleman, eh?
Yeah.
Holy, man. Just, I was sitting there listening to him, and you're just like, this guy, he could say lullabies in freaking Puerto Rican, and I would just sit there and listen and fall asleep, man. Just the one wonderful voice. Holy cow.
Yes, yes.
Wow.
So again, if you'd like to listen to part two, you can become a member of the Out of the Park family. Just go to nsrmedia.ca if it's working, because we've had some issues with nsrmedia.ca, and /become a member. And you can do that for as little as $3 a month, or you can bump it up to $5 if you wish. And right now we are, anything you can do to help us out would be wonderful. There's a donate button on our SoundCloud page. And also, if you are a business owner, you have a product you want to advertise or push, you can talk to any of our podcast partners that we've had over the years, and you'll hear that, you know, we will push the crap out of your product, Matt, won't we?
You got it.
Yes.
That's what we do. We push the crap. You got it.
Yes, yes, exactly. So that'll do it for this episode of Out of the Park. Matthew.
Yes, sir.
Candy Maldonado and I have a lot in common.
Yes.
We both had a moment where we made this really bizarre, rare mistake and misplayed a baseball and had to deal with the consequences from it. So Candy and I are both kind of we basically would have the same baseball skills, because what I did in that camera bay all those years ago, Candy Maldonado did under the lights. So
that
would make us pretty much the same. We're exactly the same.
That's ridiculous.
Okay. Matt, thank you. And
thank you, sir.
Listeners, thank you so much for making us a part of your week.
You've been listening to Out of the Park with Barry Davis. Thanks for joining us. Get home safely and see you next time.